Our next guest set off on a philosophical journey through the world of religion, exploring the thinking behind our belief, our unbelief, and points in between, and how the concepts of God or godlessness work out in our thinking and our daily lives.
In a series of interviews, he talked to philosophers from a variety of traditions, believers in different religions, as well as agnostics and atheists. Throughout the year, he's posted those interviews on the Stone, a philosophy section on the New York Times website.
Gary Gutting joins us now. He's a professor of philosophy at the University of Notre Dame and a regular contributor to the Stone. Gary, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
So why did you set off on this project?
Well, I was especially interested in the fact, which I cited it actually in the first piece I wrote about, with the fact that a large proportion of philosophers, at least in the main United States departments, are atheists. That surprised me. Philosophers are a skeptical lot. I would have thought most of them would have been agnostics, as a matter of fact. So I was looking more for why up to 70% of philosophers in surveys say that they're atheists. And so I talked to about half of the people I talked to were atheists, and then others were various sorts of believers in Christianity or other religions, and try to get a sense of what was going on.
So what's the value in trying to apply reason to our system of belief or non-belief, whatever it might be?
Yeah, you have to do that if you're a human being for any beliefs that you've got. This is not peculiar to religion. It's also, you find it with regard to ethics or politics. I mean, obviously, people do have certain rock-bottom beliefs. Philosophers sometimes call them basic beliefs. That's just where they start from, okay? And maybe belief in God is like that. Maybe belief in a whole creed of a religion is like that. Whether or not it is, your basic beliefs give rise to further questions. First of all, there's questions about what logically follows from those beliefs. You believe several things. What are you committed to in virtue of that? Or you get challenges from other people whose views you might respect, or at least that you have to come to terms with. Or you find out about scientific results that seem to be in contradiction to what your beliefs are. You have to think them through. So everybody needs what I like to call intellectual maintenance for your beliefs. So regardless of whether there's total rationality and everything's all derived from reason, which may well not be true, is not usually true for us, anybody's system of beliefs, if they're taken seriously, need various forms of intellectual maintenance.
You say we have to do this, that we need this, but you also write that in your concluding piece that religious faith without a strong role for critical reason readily falls into fanaticism. How does a lack of that reasoned examination belief lead to fanaticism, maybe destructive behavior?
Yeah, well, that's when you're refusing to take account of any alternatives, and you also start deriving conclusions which might be ethically very bad about, you know, like unbelievers are bad and they must be eliminated or something of that sort. And then you just get into a set where you aren't able to you aren't willing to to consider any alternatives to the system of belief that you've got. And then that can be very, very bad because there's no control. And again, I say that's true not only about religious beliefs, it's true with political beliefs, it's true with ethical beliefs. There's lots of beliefs that people have, which if they aren't subjected to some sort of reflective rational control, they can get out of hand.
One theme that comes up in your series of interviews, there have been efforts over the years from atheist philosophers to prove that believing that theist belief is irrational,
yeah,
and vice versa, believers trying to prove that atheism is irrational. Is this a productive line of questioning and argument?
Well, it's not productive in the sense that you might hope that we get a decisive answer in which everyone finally agrees. That certainly does not happen. That doesn't happen in politics. It doesn't happen in ethics either. It doesn't happen in most of the most interesting questions that we're concerned with as human beings. But it has resulted, I think, in considerable clarification of the beliefs, in considerable resources for thinking about what we believe and why we believe it. In other words, for helping us with our process of intellectually maintaining our beliefs, for working on them, developing them, and so on. Yeah, it's done a lot of good things that way.
Well, it's interesting to think when we encounter a different belief system, it seems like one path might be, as we learn more about it, we might drift away from our own original way of thinking, or the encounter with something different might actually reinforce what we believe to start with. What
Yeah.
Can you talk about those two alternatives a little?
Well, those two things can happen. I can be very concrete about it. I've always been to, in some meaningful sense, since I was born, associated with the belief in Catholic form of Christianity. I've been further away from it sometimes, closer other times. What in recent years has brought me closest to it is spending a lot of time thinking about and writing about the criticisms of religion by the new atheist movement. I think once you start to see how weak those criticisms are, you start to get more sympathetic, or at least I did, with religious points of view. So that's one way that it can go. Can go just the opposite of what you might expect, actually. But on the other hand, many people have had a belief in say a particular religion, and then got and had fallen away from it and had doubts about it, and then got that reinforced when they read, a lot of people read somebody like C.S. Lewis. Now, he never terribly impressed me, but a lot of people read that and say, wow, that's really clarified Christianity for me, and made it a lot more plausible. Other people have maybe been even religious in some sort of way, and then they read Richard Dawkins, the God delusion, as he calls it, and they're blown away and think, my God, this is so right. Well, I guess they don't think, my God, this is so right, but they say he's just so right, and atheism is obviously correct. He's got a very strong following of people who find him extremely convincing. One thing I've tried to do is suggest that he's not nearly as convincing as they might think he is.
Now, a lot of people might think, you know, or maybe not even consciously think, but do religion in a way that, you know, the religion is their daily or weekly practice. They go to church, they have a certain set of behaviors, prayers, devotions, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And this egg-headed philosophy stuff doesn't really enter into it. Is there a case that the practice is as important as the fundamental beliefs?
Yeah, well, in fact, in the final interview, so-called, that wrapped it all up, I allegedly interviewed myself, right? It's a little disconcerting thing to do. You have to keep yourself honest. But one point I brought up there, which I'd often thought about before, and that many of our many of my interviewees, both and incidentally atheists like Philip Kitcher at Columbia, and also many actually strong religious believers like Howard Wettstein, who's Jewish, but also says that he's a materialist and he's a naturalist. That is to say, I shouldn't say materialist, I mean naturalist, and doesn't think there are any supernatural beings. They all emphasize, and I would emphasize it too, that for almost everybody, religious belief starts on the level of practice. I mean, you don't just start out saying, wow, here's a great argument for the existence of God, so I'm going to believe in God. You start out usually by engaging in the practice of one or another religion, either born in it or you get interested in it from friends or you just are curious and you go. And I think, let's put it this way, for most believers, even the strongest believers, I think the very root of their belief is this. Practicing this religion, that is, living according to its precepts, engaging in its rituals, its prayers, its way of thinking, reading things that are written by people that are from its tradition, it's a good thing to do. I get something out of that. Certainly, I would say I would remain, I think it would always remain a Catholic, and always have, simply in those terms. I think I get a lot out of a close association. For me, it's especially the Catholic intellectual tradition, the writers like Augustine and Aquinas and Newman and those sorts of people. That means a lot to me, and I think it's important for me to read about those people and to think about them and to reflect on those doctrines and try to apply that in my life and so on. So I think practice is the starting point. And then I think the next thing is that obviously the doctrines have a lot of they make a lot of claims, right? They make what seem to be factual claims. They tell stories that they say are true. They give you doctrines about the Trinity, the Eucharist, and so forth. I think those can be very successfully used. And I'm not exclusivist about this. I think the doctrines of many different religions can be used to better understand aspects of the human situation. I mean, take the evil that's in the world, and we try to come to terms with it. Well, you can read what is basically a very brilliant story, the book of Job, and you can learn a lot, you can understand a lot about evil from it, whether or not there actually was this God who spoke to Job, who had these terrible things happen to him, and the devil was involved, and so on. That's all another matter. But just as you can read a great novel and come to understand things, you can learn a lot in the way of understanding from these doctrines. So you can get all of that before you get to the level of, are these doctrines actual factual truths about the way the world runs? And I myself am pretty agnostic about most claims made on in any religion about that this is actually the fact of the way the world was created, or this is the being that's behind it, and that being is exactly like this. I'm a religious agnostic. That is, I practice religion. I like to think in terms of religion. I think that part of my religion is saying I don't really know much about any of that, those actual factual details.
We're talking to philosopher Gary Gutting. He recently explored belief systems, including major world religions and agnosticism and atheism, in a series of interviews published on the New York Times website.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you worked with interfaith groups or explored belief systems different from yours? Do you think there's room for common ground among different faith groups or between believers, agnostics, and atheists? And do you believe in God in some way? And what does that exactly mean to you? Call 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org.
We'll continue the conversation after a look at the latest news with Kristen Durst.
We continue our conversation about religion, belief, and philosophy with Gary Gutting. He's a philosophy professor at Notre Dame, and he did a series of interviews on the New York Times website looking at different faiths and belief systems around the world.
And you can join the conversation. How have your own beliefs evolved through your life? Have you checked out a belief or non-belief systems different than your own? Did that challenge your worldview or reinforce it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Mike on the line in Green Bay. Mike, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to sort of make a statement. You know, I'm first generation Vietnamese American, and I was born in Arkansas, and my sister was brought over at 1 year old. And me and my sister were raised First Southern Baptist, but my parents are 100% Buddhist. But we were adopted by a church, you know, adopt a family because of the war. So from the research I found and what I've been exposed to, it's really where you're born. Like a big part of it is where you're born and raised, obviously.
Interesting. So, Gary, a lot of our religious belief is the happenstance of our birth, or in this case, our adoption into a religious faith.
Yeah, that's a really interesting situation Mike is in, because he has, in a way, a heritage of the Buddhist faith, but he's lived out one in terms of the Baptist faith. It is true. I mean, one of the first ways to get yourself thinking about your religion is to ask yourself, supposing I had been born in Vietnam, supposing I'd been born in Saudi Arabia, supposing I'd been born in communist China back in Mao's time, what would be my religious beliefs? Well, they very likely would not be similar to what you have. That's certainly true. So there's a danger, I think, in any highly exclusivist way of thinking about religion. I think any intellectually plausible way of any intellectually responsible way of thinking about religion has got to say, look, this is one way of thinking about these truths or these realities that are beyond the world, but there've got to be other ways too, and I'm not going to be able to say that this is the only way or the best way. I think you have to be open to that. I don't see where exclusivism gets you anywhere. One of the atheists I interviewed, Philip Kitcher, formulated, and he's not the only one who has formulated this, but it's a very good challenge. It says, look, and a lot of the new atheists like to make this point. They say, if you hold a strong particular sectarian religious belief, you actually deny the beliefs of all other religions that contradict your belief, which they usually do. Now, think about it. Do you have any better reason for accepting your religion's belief then the people who are in the other religious, that have been raised in those other religions, have to believe theirs. If you were in their situation, wouldn't you have their beliefs and wouldn't you be equally entitled to it? I think that's a very strong point. And it got to lead us, I think, to a non-exclusivist view of religion.
Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. And we'll go now to Tim in Wisconsin Dells. Tim, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for calling. Thank you for taking my call. Anyways, I didn't grow up religious at all by any means, and fell in love with a girl from a very, Catholic family. And for 6 years now, I've been doing communion because I thought I was supposed to, because they would drag me to church. And it finally came about where my brother-in-law asked me why I was taking communion, and the whole family's been talking about it for the last 6 years. Since I'm not Catholic, I was just trying to be nice. But anyways, my wife isn't. She doesn't practice anymore either. She doesn't believe in it. But she turns into a completely different person when she's around her family, and we have to go to church.
Uh-huh.
And it just makes me feel uncomfortable. So I was wondering if you had any advice.
Interesting. When in Roman Catholicism, do as the Roman Catholics do, doesn't actually apply in that particular situation. But trying to fit in with a religious tradition that isn't our own. Interesting situation, Gary.
Yeah, that is true. And sometimes I think you do have to be polite. New atheists are often not polite, and often will just be very critical. There are a lot of religious people, especially of a fundamentalist sort, that are like that. But you can't. I mean, I don't think you should be deceitful. And I guess I would say I wouldn't go to communion if I didn't believe or didn't think I should be practicing that particular religion. Wouldn't want to be acting as though I believe something I didn't believe. On the other hand, I wouldn't want to just flaunt my lack of faith in situations where other people would be made very uncomfortable by it.
All right. Well, good luck sorting that out, Tim. We'll go back to our callers with Ellen on the line in Milwaukee. Ellen, hi.
Hi. Oh, so good to talk to you. I grew up hearing the names Augustine and St. Thomas Aquinas, and, very unusual kind of upbringing. My father was a Irish Catholic from Chicago, professor of philosophy, Thomist, and he raised us very, very strictly, so none of us wanted to be Catholic. I especially didn't want to be Catholic because I was a girl, a woman. And I didn't like, I said, I'll be a Catholic when I can be a priest, Dad.
Yeah, you don't want to be a member of an organization you can't be in charge of, right? I mean,
yeah. But in the past, dozen years or so, I've been finally realizing that I am Catholic by culture. My values are Catholic. I hang out with Catholic or ex-Catholic people. And the other thing is that I am now dealing with the question of evil. And knowing that I'm going to have to get deeper into reading or something. My sister died this year, a couple months ago, and she died she was not sick. She died as a result of being given care in a very, very poor care place. Mm-hmm. And it was excruciating to watch her get sicker and weaker and then die. And so I believe I was in the presence of evil going through this experience with her. And it's really affecting me. I'm trying to find meaning in life. But anyway, just the two things. I accept my Catholicism by culture happily. I don't like the dogmas. I don't go to church. But I see myself as a cultural Catholic, and I'm finally grateful for that heritage.
Wow, Ellen, thank you so much. A lot there, Gary. And Ellen, I'm sorry for your loss and the experience with your sister. But Gary, take that where you want to go with it.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate what Ellen's saying here. I think often the notion of cultural Catholic is used in a very a deprecatory way. You're just a cultural Catholic or whatever. But I think Catholicism is almost above all a cultural phenomenon, more even than it is an institutional phenomenon. I myself don't have a great deal of sympathy with much of what goes on in the institutional church. And the hierarchy, I don't think, is or should be definitive with regard to how I think or what views I take. But I do have a huge respect for that. It's not just intellectual. It's artistic, it's ethical. The whole culture that's been developed over 2,000 years in the Catholic Church, and I think that that's a very important way to be Catholic. And one thing I would encourage is that I think that people who have a sympathy for some of the rituals and want to go to church, even if they don't have a doctrinal belief or they don't have a sympathy with the hierarchy, I think they should, there's no reason they shouldn't regard themselves as part of the Catholic Church. There are many different ways of being Catholic, and some of the best are deeply rooted cultural ones.
Thanks a lot for that call, Ellen. And Gary, you and Ellen have a situation probably a lot of people have some permutation of sorting out what are my spiritual beliefs. Do they fit in with the hierarchy or the institution, whatever the faith may be? Is this one of the big questions of our time?
Well, it is a big question, I think. I think that there is a very important question that's interesting also, and I think a lot of people are interested in this. Do we have to have religion, or maybe more broadly spirituality, does it have to be associated with the institutional structures of churches? Churches, of course, have a vested interest in saying, absolutely, if you're not belonging to one church or another, and some of them, they're rather broad-minded now, so you can pick the church you want to belong to, but you should belong to a church. I don't know. Is the religious impulse, is our desire for a spiritual life, is that necessarily best fulfilled in the institutional structures of these social organizations that we call churches? One thing I learned when I talked to people that knew a whole lot about Eastern religions, especially Buddhism and Hinduism, was that those religions are frequently, they have a strong social basis in society, but they don't have anything, often they don't have anything nearly like what the Catholic Church or even some of the Protestant churches have in terms of a fixed institutional structure. So I'm not sure that this is a necessary part of religious life, and I think a lot of people get pushed away from religious life because they think it means belonging to a church.
Well, Gary, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been great to be here.
That's Gary Gutting. He's professor of philosophy at the University of Notre Dame. You can find his series of interviews on religion on the New York Times website. It's part of The Stone. That's their philosophy blog.